Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, where in Israel is the Ghetto Fighters Museum located, and how is it different from Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum? The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was the 1943 act of Jewish resistance in the Warsaw Ghetto in German-occupied Poland during World War II to oppose Nazi Germany's final effort to transport the remaining ghetto population to death camps. The uprising was the largest single revolt by Jews during World War II. It started on April 19th when the ghetto refused to surrender to the SS police commander, who then ordered the burning of the ghetto block by block, which ended on May 16th. In 2009, we interviewed Nora Gaon, a historian and Spanish language director of the Ghetto Fighters Museum in northern Israel. This museum, built in 1949, was the first Holocaust museum in the world and is the only one with a section especially for children. Nora spoke with us about the founding of the museum and its mission. To commemorate the 80th anniversary of the uprising, we're offering you this program again.
Thank you so much for speaking with us, Nora. I really appreciate it. Let me see if I pronounce the name of the kibbutz properly, okay? Lochamei ha-getaot.
Yes, of course. It's very good.
Thank you. I've been practicing. Could you tell us about the kibbutz? Who started it? When was it started?
Okay.
A little bit.
The kibbutz Lochamei ha-getaot started in April 49. A group of 140 people, all of them survivors of the Holocaust. They came to Israel during 48, when the state was born, and 49, and they decided to build a house, to build a new house as a community. And they decided to build a kibbutz. And they received the land in the Western Galilee, between Akko and Nahariya. And they started as a new community, but a special one. A special because most of the people left their parents, friends in the war, and they made Aliyah and came to Israel alone. And they decided to continue, to not survive as regular issue, to survive, to continue, and to build themselves again.
How many people were there, and about what were their ages? Were there both men and women?
Yes, they were almost 140 men and women. Then there were only four couples. All of them were single, and there were no children in 49. And they decided to start with orchard and cows, and one of them, not only one, but a little group of them that were survivors of Warsaw Ghetto, they were fighters in the Warsaw Ghetto, they decided let's make a place. They didn't spoke then about a museum, but they have a special meeting, and in that meeting they decided that every member brings to a special house all the staff that they brought from Europe, from the war. The Yellow Star, and pictures and letters, and they decided to organize this, and then in April they open an exhibition, very small exhibition, and this was the beginning of the museum.
I'm surprised that they had stuff to bring. Was there a lot of stuff?
No, not a lot of stuff, but especially letters And some of them, not all of them, came from Poland. There were some partisans that came from, one family came from Italy. Two or three men especially, they came from Hungary and from Poland, from different places. You have to remember that the war finished at 45. Then most of them, they went around in Europe before they came to Israel. Then, especially photographs and letters and personal things, yeah.
Are there any of the original people left still there?
Yes, of course. I don't know how many people, but in the beginning they were the guides in the museum. And you know that a guide that can speak in first person, I was there, not as I do. I speak in third day, and they were special people because some of them wanted to guide in the museum, wanted to explain that it's very strange in the 50s. No, so many survivors started to speak about what happened with them in the 50s. You know that after the Eichmann trial, everything changed in the Israeli society. Then in the beginning of the 60s, it was a really change. But they started in the 50s. They started then the museum.
I think perhaps the most important thing the museum does is educational. When I was there, which was maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was very impressed because there was an elderly man speaking to a whole bunch of what looked like school children, and the children were just rapt. I mean, they weren't talking. They were really, really listening to what he was saying, and of course, I didn't understand it because it was in Hebrew. But could you tell us a little bit about the educational program? Because I know that's what you do too, right?
Yes. Our museum is an educational museum. I don't remember when exactly, in the 80s, somebody asked Yitzhak Zuckerman. He was one of the members of the ghetto fighters, ghetto revolt, and he was one of the members of the kibbutz, and they asked him, what's the difference between Yad Vashem and you in Beit Lochamei HaGetaot? And he said, Yad Vashem is the shrine, and we are Midrash, Beit Midrash. It's like a place that you can learn. You can teach, you can learn, you can speak, with, you can ask the tough questions about what happened. And then that was in the beginning, and we continue with this. We have a lot of educational programs. We received lots of groups from Israel and from abroad. From Israel, we receive groups from schools, from universities. We receive a lot of groups of soldiers as educational training for them, police officers, and everything is open. From abroad, we receive a lot of groups in different languages, seminars from Yad Vashem, which came to Yad Vashem for 2 weeks. Then one day, they came and they visit us. One special thing that we have that is in education is humanistic center. The humanistic center is something different in the educational panorama of the Holocaust because we receive groups of Arab children or youth from the Galilee, from different schools, and we don't teach them Holocaust. We try to understand. They are exposed for the first time about the Holocaust, and they and we try to approach them and to the theme. Then it's a very wide range of themes in our educational point of view.
Because I think a lot of people have the idea that the Jews just didn't resist, you know, that they just let the Holocaust happen. And I think that that's something that you try to fight against, no?
I'm not fighting.
Well, no, you know what I mean.
Yes,
but to combat that idea.
We try to fight the concept of they took them without any resistance. Some of them, yes, some of them were took without any resistance, but lots of them made even really tiny things, tiny, as teaching in the when it was forbidden, or trying to smuggle food, or Torah scroll against the law. We try to say also very little things were made for the continuing of life. And to continue, they decided to continue the values. How you can do this? If you fight, you don't have to have a revolver. You don't have to have a weapon. There are very different forms and types of resistance.
What kind of reactions have you gotten from some of these foreign groups who've gone to visit?
It depends where they come from. If they come from Argentina, from South America, or they come from Middle America, or Colombia, or Venezuela, especially Venezuela, when they live now in fear about Chavez, what happened there now. And then when we talk about how to see when what is coming, and they ask their questions. What in Caracas, it could be the same what happened in Berlin. We can be the next victims. And I think that it's different if European camps, if groups of Spain or groups of France or Germany. They have a different point of view.
Does the museum have any plans for the future? Anything new that you're going to be doing soon? You can tell us about?
A lot of plans. First of all, we opened two new exhibitions, one about the memory and one about this group of 140 people that started the museum. This is the museum level, but we try to open and we try to be known.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if you would like to learn more about the Ghetto Fighters House, we're including a link to a presentation and tour of the museum that was done in 2021 by Volunteers for Israel.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. I'll leave you now with a very special song, Steh auf zum Kampf, Rise Up and Fight, from the CD of the same name. The song was written by Leah Svirsky, a teenage poet, in the Kaisiadoris labor camp near Kovno in the spring of 1943. Its rousing lyrics inspired many Jewish prisoners to join the partisan fighters in the forests nearby. The song, in Yiddish, says, Jewish people, rise up and fight. Too long have we been oppressed. We won't be slaves, our rights we will claim, and we will never, never forget. See you next week. Und heute lassen wir uns in die Welt.
Tanzen